Mark Aspin is manager of the Pastoral Greenhouse Gas Research Consortium, a strategic partnership between the pastoral sector and Crown, tasked with developing and delivering solutions to reduce New Zealand's agricultural greenhouse gas emissions. Mark's been manager there since 2004. Adrian Walcroft is a Landcare research scientist and research program leader for methane mitigation technologies. He's in the process of developing methane biofilters, a practical short-term solution that could significantly reduce methane emissions from oxidation ponds, landfills and cowsheds. Graham Atwood is an ag research microbiologist who leads a team specializing in rumen microbial genomics. And the team last year, as many of you will have seen, were the first in the world to map the genetic sequence of a rumen methanogen. Neil Wedlock is an ag research senior scientist based at Ag Research Hopkirk Research Institute in Palmerston North. As a molecular immunologist, he's worked in the field of vaccinology for the last 16 years with a particular interest in developing vaccines for bovine tuberculosis, mastitis of dairy cows, and more recently and more relevant to this discussion, a vaccine to reduce methane emissions from ruminants. So I'll hand over now to Mark Aspin to start the briefing.
Thank you. It's good to have an opportunity to talk. Hopefully I can run this thing. You want to see that? Okay. So the consortium, as we've just heard, has been going since 2002, and our target is to have enduring solutions to reduce agricultural greenhouse gas emissions, which is, we are aware, it's 50-odd percent, 48% of our total emissions here. The consortium is a industry crown partnership. The players that are around the table here, AgResearch, Dairy New Zealand, Fonterra, Meat and Wool New Zealand, PGG Wrights and Fert Research and Landcorp all contribute funding to the consortium, and that is matched on a one-to-one basis through the Foundation for Research, Science and Technology. And we also have sitting around our board table NIWA from an input from climate science in general and from MAF for their activity in this space as well. So we try and build a collaborative and we've always taken an attitude of trying to keep people involved. The consortium, when it was formed in 2002, had really three sort of target goals or reasons for being. Firstly, was one to invest in research to improve ruminant productivity. Secondly, was obviously with the name, develop solutions to reduce methane and nitrous oxide from livestock. And the consortium takes an attitude of these two are not mutually exclusive, they're very inclusive, and we're trying to get two wins here. So we recognise that the drivers on our farmers is around productivity, but the cost of carbon is on the horizon. And the third reason there, to position the sector to take advantage of international opportunities in the future. In 2002, it was clear that carbon was going to start to come through, and our sector is strongly export-focused, and we want to make sure we're going to be competitive as we go forward.
Does anybody know how to mute the thing on these phones so that your conversation isn't going into the telecom?
We're very much around the effective partnerships, and that's been a focus for us. We're collaboration and partnering is central the way we do things. We're an unincorporated joint venture. You've seen the partners already. It's been reinforced by a 2003 memorandum of understanding we have between the Crown and the consortium partners, which gave us the role of coordinating and making sure that we reported to the Crown on a regular basis about the activities. We've been in the operation since 2002. We support collaborations where they're advantageous nationally and internationally. We don't have a great deal of international activity, but we certainly have a lot of connections. But the vast point there, science, farming, business and government all need to work together to reduce agricultural emissions. Is a very key issue and a focus that we take to the work we do. How am I going for time, Peter?
Yeah, you've got about 2 or 3 minutes left.
All right, yeah. So I'll hook through these ones pretty quick. Goal and vision is to decrease total agricultural emissions of greenhouse gases by 10% over business as usual relative to 2004. We think efficiency is driving about 10%. We want to add a further 10% to that. the next the mission is to deliver knowledge and economically viable mitigation practices that contribute to New Zealand farmers being able to manage their greenhouse gases. And really that last target, which was one of several, is to make sure the sector is competitive and being able to do what it needs to do to get ahead. Whoa, some arrows come in here. I don't know where they've come from. That diagram just gives you a bit of a background or a outline of the R&D program that we've got, which is around about $5 to $6 million annually we invest in this space. It's been $24 million up to this point in time. And those blue clouds are the areas we work in. I'm not going to touch on them in a lot of depth. You're going to hear a little bit about genomics from Graham shortly and about the vaccine from Neil. So those guys are well placed within the consortium's team of science we utilise to tell you about that. But really our focus has strongly been on understanding the microbes and the methane, methanogens that create methane, and using that knowledge through that's generated through genomics to align ourselves to be able to perhaps get inhibitors and vaccine in the future. We've also done a lot of work in the breeding space. We've got flocks of sheep that have got about an 8% difference between a high and low, and we think that's a long-term opportunity. We've also done analysis with dairy cows. We've looked at forage. In the nitrous oxide space, we work with Ravensdown in the development of EcoN, the nitrification inhibitor, but we've also looked at feed pads and some of that other area as well. So this next slide is just giving you a quick shot of what we've done to date. We've got the most renowned program. It's comprehensive across the globe, we believe. We've already heard about the Rubin methane genome. We still believe real solutions for methane are still 7 to 10 years away. Nitrous oxide is a little bit more advanced, but it needs proving nationally and across the sectors. But the question we've got to continually ask ourselves, how will we reduce emissions? And knowledge is part of it, but it's important to recognise that there are other challenges around this as well. Firstly, that knowledge. We've got to find solutions that actually reduce emissions, and we certainly hear on a regular basis of people who've got something, but when you dig a bit deeper, it's not quite so useful as you'd like. High rates of adoption that ensure maximum impact, and whether they're accounted for within climate change. And that's a very important issue that's starting to appear. If we're going to be able to reflect value via a reduction in cost, they've got to count in any climate change space. The other point we want to make is that solutions need time. They need time to be developed, not time to prove concept and delivery, and time to be commercialised, again, counted and influence business, and they've got to fit with other productivity goals. So we've got some serious challenges outside the science, which you'll hear about shortly. But in terms of some of the targets that we're off in the future options that we've identified, there's a couple of lists up there for you. You can see system efficiency is on the top of the list for both nitrous and methane, and reducing livestock numbers is on the bottom of the list. They are options, but they're not probably desired options across the sector. It makes it a bit hard when you're a livestock farmer and you're dropping your numbers. But you can see there's a range of approaches, and we think there won't be a silver bullet in the sense of one thing, and farming systems with their complexities are going to require a number of different opportunities. So in summary, I've just put up that the industry is central to the economy. It's going to be affected by climate change. The technological challenges are still significant. The consortium is lead agency for progressing the strategies and the science. The risks are being met through a broad program, and we think we are still well placed towards achieving several options for methane and nitrous oxide. So just in closing, so where are we at? With methane, we're accelerating our vaccine and inhibitors program. You hear about that. Animal variation is much more clear than it was 5 to 6 years ago. Our rumen microbe measurement tools are well advanced, and this is really important in the methane space, that if you make a change in the rumen, you can actually know what's going on and be able to actually make sure that whatever you're doing is robust for animal performance. We're much better placed now to understand what happens when we mitigate, but our knowledge still needs to go a long way yet. And with nitrous oxide, well, the nitrification inhibitor evaluation is underway. It's certainly been well developed and it's commercially available, but there is concern across the sectors that the nitrification inhibitors, which have been shown to be very effective in reducing nitrate leaching and nitrous oxide emissions, is it going to happen in the real world where farmers are utilising it on their farms during the winter months, which is normally the time of the year we have nitrous oxide losses? So in that, we've got an industry government partnership that has initiated some trials for the next 3 years, initially in four regions, so South Otago, Canterbury, Manawatu and the Waikato, but that will expand to some other regions in the next few years. We're going to be evaluating the end cycle effects and the pasture benefits of using nitrification inhibitors, as I said, over 3 years. And the challenge and the focus is to include second generation approaches. The current nitrification inhibitor is a product based on DCD. There are some others that have been developed and we want to bring those into the trials over the years as well. And I think I've given you a bit of a very quick rundown.
I'm on mute.
So that's me.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike. We'll hand over to Adrian now.
I'm talking about development of a technology, a methane biofilter, which could potentially reduce agricultural emissions, agricultural greenhouse gas. I'm part of a small team here in Palmerston North. My collaborators, colleagues are Kevin Tate, Chris Pratt. So what is a methane biofilter? Biofilters in general use material to capture and biologically degrade pollutants. And good examples are odour control for piggeries, for example, or wastewater treatment through constructed wetlands. The living material that we're looking at are naturally occurring bacteria called methanotrophs. These bacteria live in the soil and they consume methane and in the process leach carbon dioxide water. So a methane biofilter then comprises a medium in which we want them to grow these methanotrophs and through which flow gas containing methane, which is a pollutant in this case, and the methanotrophs will consume the methane and release carbon dioxide. So the mitigation potential of a methane biofilter comes from that process of converting methane to carbon dioxide, because methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than CO2, and so you're reducing the warming potential of those emissions by about one-fold. Methane biofilters were originally, the technology was sort of developed to try and reduce emissions from landfills. Landfills produce large amounts of gas which has a very high methane concentration, and if it's not captured and used for energy, then it's normally just vented into the atmosphere. So there's been work done looking at developing methane biofilters to mitigate that gas from landfills, and they've shown very high removal efficiency. 80 to 90% of the methane can be converted to CO2. Well, it's occurred to us that could we use the same technology to treat the gas that comes off effluent ponds on dairy farms. Effluent ponds receive the effluent, which is washed off the cow shed two times a day. It goes into an anaerobic pond, and these ponds emit biogas, very similar to the gas that comes from landfills. Same time, there's been technology developed by NIWA, which where you can put a cap over the top of the anaerobic pond and actually capture that gas. In NIWA's case, they're looking at it for energy generation, but in our case, we're thinking, well, in situations where that's not appropriate, you can get gas and treat it in a methane biofilter. So why not use the methane for energy? Well, most New Zealand dairy farms are actually too small to warrant the capital expenditure in a digester, an engine, a generator, all the switchgear and everything else. There's been an analysis done that shows you need 800 to 1,000 cows for it to be an economic proposition, and herds of that size only comprise about 5% of the herds in New Zealand. So I've done a calculation here for the average dairy farm, average size dairy farm in New Zealand, which last year was 351 cows. You can see that most of the emissions there come from enteric fermentation, 80 to 90%. And a smaller proportion, between 9 and 18%, comes from the effluent pond itself, and then a small contribution from dung, which ends up on the pastures. So there's some, between 3 and 6, roughly 3 to 6 tonnes of methane is emitted from the effluent pond per year, and that's sufficient to generate about 10 to 20 megawatt hours of electricity, which could be worth somewhere between $1,500 and $3,000. So the economic returns don't really justify energy generation on the average size dairy farm in New Zealand. So our idea is that methane biofilters could be a cost-effective solution to reducing methane emissions on small to medium-sized dairy farms. What about other point sources of methane on farms? Where you have a point source, that gives you an opportunity to mitigate it. On farms in New Zealand, animal housings are becoming more popular for various production reasons and also animal welfare reasons. And wintering barns are becoming popular, particularly in Southland. On the right is a picture of a wintering barn in Southland that can hold 500 cows. And they put the cows in there for 3 to 4 months over the winter and early spring period to reduce damage on the pastures. In these sheds, of course, because the animals are emitting methane from the rumen, so the methane accumulates, although the concentration is a lot lower in here than what we get off an effluent pond. So we believe that apply methane biofilter technology to these wintering barns, it would be feasible, but a lot more technical things than the effluent pond situation. Where would we find active methanotroph populations? Well, it occurred to us the best place to find them is landfill cap soils because of the large amount of methane that's coming from those decomposing refuse, which then diffuses up through the soil cap. And these methanotrophs, of course, will be adapted to very high methane concentrations and will be very highly active. So we went to the landfill at the Taupo District Council and sampled some of the soil from the landfill cap, which was put in place 8 years ago over a part of the landfill full. These soils are volcanic origins, are very derived from pumice, and they have very excellent properties for growing active methanotrophs. They are very a large amount of aeration, and also they hold a lot of moisture. We brought these soils back to our laboratory, which we've developed specifically for looking at methanotroph methane consumption. And we put the soils in these chambers here. These are two of the soils from the Taupo landfill. These chambers here are linked up to an instrument here, which can measure the methane concentration. We can use this facility to undertake experiments which will optimise the methane oxidation rate by these methanotrophs. We're looking at different methanotroph types. There's type 1 and type 2 methanotrophs. We're looking at the effect of methane concentration and flow rate, media, moisture content, temperature and so on. Just some quick results here. We exposed these soils, the methanotrophs in these soils, to methane concentrations from 1,000 ppm, that's the red line, all the way up to 35,000 ppm. And what we saw was, as soon as we increase the methane concentration, these methanotrophs respond instantly. They're sitting there waiting for more and more food to eat, basically. And the black line at the top is the removal efficiency, and you can see it was about 98% for most of the time, and it was only when we got to these very high concentrations that the oxidation efficiency started to decline. So we believe these are a suitable population for filtering methane from effluent ponds. So to summarise, a methane biofilter converts methane to carbon dioxide using biological oxidation by bacteria. The result of that is a story. Can contribute 9 to 18% of the methane.
Sorry. No, I'm saying I'm well.
Excuse me, can you just please mute your phone?
Biofilters can reduce methane emissions from effluent ponds on smaller farms. Their energy generation is uneconomic to warrant the capital expenditure, and we're in fact about to install a prototype biofilter on the effluent pond on a Massey dairy farm here in Palmerston North. And finally, biofilters might also capture methane emitted by cows housed in barns and herd homes. Finally, I just acknowledge this is an international collaboration between University of Victoria in Canada and also Macaulay Institute in Aberdeen, and the work funded initially by the Capability Fund of Landcare Research and more recently under the Plan of Action funding by the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry. That's me. Thank you.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Adrian. We'll hand over to Graham now.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep. We've just had a fire alarm.
Oh, dear. Okay, you better leave the building then, Graham.
I'll hang up and I'll call back in maybe 2 minutes.
Sure, that's fine. Thank you. Okay. Okay. We'll head straight to Neil's presentation.
Okay, thank you. Over the next 2 minutes, I'd like to talk a little bit on our work to develop a vaccine to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from ruminants. Our aim is to develop a safe, cost-effective, and obviously an efficient vaccine, which will be a useful tool to reduce methane emissions in sheep and cattle and deer. There are a number of advantages of using a vaccine. Generally, they can be made very cheaply. They're amenable to pastoral-based farming. They're safe. And there's a long history of using vaccines. Farmers are used to vaccinating their animals for a variety of infectious diseases or conditions. And so there would be a very good uptake by farmers and wide acceptance of their use. The concept is to vaccinate the ruminants to generate antibody in saliva. This is antibody which will neutralize the methanogens, which will inhibit their growth and methane production in the rumen. So we're harnessing power of the immune system and using it to our advantage. I put up some figures there showing the copious quantities of saliva that sheep and cattle produce each day. And if we can have an antibody, a neutralizing antibody in that saliva, then there's a constant replenishment. That saliva, most of that saliva ends up in the rumen, swallows and ends up in the rumen and will have an impact on methanogens. Okay, just waiting here. Some work done overseas and in New Zealand using sheep have shown that a vaccine that's comprised of whole cells and methanogens is not very effective. So a crude vaccine just using the entire cells, even if you use a number of different species or strains of methanogens, is not the answer. We need to identify the components, which proteins of the methanogens are recognized by the immune system. And not only that, of course, those proteins have to be proteins which are essential for function, involved in nutrient uptake or involved in methanogenesis, involved in survival. We're working on the model methanogen, Methanobrevibacter ruminantium, which is the organism that has been sequenced recently. It's a representative rumen methanogens. We have produced a number of different fractions. We broke up the cells open. We have split them into different fractions. Each of these fractions contain a number of proteins, number of potential vaccine candidates. Our aim is to find out which ones we need to concentrate on to formulate an effective vaccine. We vaccinated sheep with these fractions and have generated anti-sera. Okay. And this next few slides are really just summarizing some of the data over a number of trials. The sheep that have been vaccinated with these methanogen fractions have produced very strong antibody responses, not only in the blood but also saliva. We have tested a range of the anti-sera for the ability of the antibodies to reduce the growth of our model methanogens in vitro culture. And this is work that's done in collaboration with scientists across the road from us at Ag Research Grasslands. They've developed very good methods of culturing methanogens in pure culture, precisely measuring their growth, their methane production, and then they can assess the impact of antibodies on that methane production. Next slide. This is just showing the effect of adding some of these anti-sera to the methanogens in the pure culture. And if you look at the figure on the right, you'll see some single cells, methanogens. This is the normal growth pattern. We can add a pre-immune serum, a serum that doesn't contain the antibodies to the methanogens to that culture, it'll have no effect. But on the left, you see quite a different scenario. You see a very heavily clumped organism. The antibody and the anti-sera has coated the methanogens on the surface and has induced clumping or agglutination. We don't know, but it's possible that this agglutination, this clumping on its own, may have a detrimental effect on the methanogen. It may actually reduce the ability of the methanogen in the rumen to produce methane. It may stop the organism growing. It may not get the nutrients it requires. It may be eliminated from the rumen. But we're not sure on that at this stage. Next slide. So here we have the, on the left-hand figure, we have the effect of adding the antisera to the pure cultures of methanogens on their growth. And you can see, if you look at the black hatched line, that's a normal growth curve. And if we add water, we add pre-immune serum that doesn't have the antibodies to those cultures, they grow normally. They exhibit a normal growth curve. The green and red lines, you can see those are representative cultures that have had anti-sera to these various fractions added. And you can see that if we add just a single addition of this anti-sera, it significantly reduces the growth of the organism. And on the right-hand figure, we have the effect on methane. And again, you can see that if we, in red and green, if we add anti-sera against some of these fractions, the antibodies are obviously having an effect on the methanogens. They're reducing their ability, significantly reducing their ability to produce methane. So this data and other data that we've got has provided proof of concept that a vaccine could work and is a feasible option and worthwhile research avenue